7:14 now on this Monday morning. Not so good for the Saints. LSU, however, came through. Jeff Palermo joins us now, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director. How you doing, Jeff?
Oh, I'm doing well, Tommy. How about yourself?
I'm all right. Caden Durham's doing pretty well. He had him a night on Saturday night, huh?
He couldn't get off to a better start, right? The swing pass out to him. Well, it was a short swing pass out to him, and then the long run. And then that was on the first offensive play of the game. That was, what, a 76-yard touchdown pass. And then it had an 80-yard-plus run on the next drive that set up a 1-yard touchdown run by Garrett Nussmeier. Unfortunately, he left the game early, and it's been reported that he suffered 2 dislocated toes. I've heard of a lot of football injuries. I've never heard of a player suffering 2, not just 1, but 2 dislocated toes. Now, of course, LSU doesn't have a game this Saturday. Mm-hmm. Coach Brian Kelly said after the game, it's not a serious injury. But I don't know. We'll see. Hopefully he's ready to go October 12th when the Tigers take on Ole Miss.
To be clear, you're talking about Garrett Nussmeier having
Caden Durham. Durham had the dislocated toes. That's why he left early in that game.
All right, I misunderstood what you were saying, because that's a big difference, because I'm thinking Garrett Nussmeier maybe be a difference as opposed to – yeah, well, let's hope that gets better. I guess you would think dislocated as opposed to broken, you just kind of put them back where they're supposed to be. I'm no doctor, obviously. And then they're sore, so I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing is, though, for a running back like him that really relies on his speed, because this is going to be – Caden Durham plans on being a two-sport athlete at LSU. Mm-hmm. He also plans to run track, so speed is a big part of his game. And you just don't want to hear about any kind of you don't want to hear about any injury with a football player, but a guy that relies so much on his speed, you don't want to hear about any kind of a foot injury. But it is good that at least LSU does not have a game to worry about this Saturday.
I did not see the game. Full disclosure, I got to admit, I was busy and didn't have a chance to see it. Tell me what else you took away from the game on Saturday night.
Well, I guess to talk about Garrett Nussmeier, really good game for him again. He threw for over 400 yards. He did throw for 2 interceptions, his first multi-interception game this season. The second one, he ended up receiving a tongue-lashing from Brian Kelly when he got to the sidelines. It was not a good throw from him. He's been very good this season in taking care of the football, making sure he doesn't throw it in a dangerous spot that can lead to a turnover, but he did there. Who knows? I mean, you're up big. Maybe you get a little bit careless with the football, and I think that's kind of what happened with Garrett Nussmeier. I thought it was a good performance from the offensive line. The defensive line and the linebackers, I thought, played really well in this game. We talked a lot about this South Alabama team coming into Tiger Stadium as a very good offensive team, a team that has put up a lot of points, but LSU only gives up just the 1 touchdown. They had a great goal line stand where Whit Weeks knocked the helmet off the ball carrier as he was trying to get into the end zone. I thought that was a great play. You didn't notice the absence of Harold Perkins, and I think a lot of that was because of the great linebacker play that they got from Whit Weeks and Greg Penn. Safety remains a focal point defensively for this team. I mean, Coach Brian Kelly was pretty blunt with his assessment afterwards, talking about, hey, we're rotating a lot of guys in there, trying to figure out what's the best combination at free and strong safety. Well, it's time to stop the rotations. They got to figure out who are the 2 or 3 guys that they're going to be really counting on at the safety position, because from here on out, it's now all SEC games and a big one coming up on October 12th. So, I think with this week and practice, they're going to try to really narrow it down to, okay, we got all this game film on these guys. Who are our 2 or 3 best guys? And so we'll see who they decide to roll with against the Rebels on October 12th.
What about the LSU defensive backs?
Yeah, I mean, that's a big problem at the safety position. I thought the cornerbacks, they didn't necessarily get tested too much in this game. I think there was so much concern about the defensive line. I think it has been a pleasant surprise at how well they are playing. Ahmad Bro, a true freshman, has really played well. He graded out well, according to Pro Football Focus. They're getting outstanding pressure from their defensive ends, Braden Swinson and Savion Jones. Those two guys are playing really well. There was a lot of concern about that defensive line, and those concerns grew even louder when Jacoby and Guillory went down with the torn Achilles tendon in the Nichols game. But I tell you what, I think that I've been impressed. I've been impressed at how well they've come along. JVR Suggs, he's on the smaller end, and he only plays a handful of plays, but when he's out there, he's making plays. And so it's been nice to see. Now we'll see how well they really do hold up now that it's just all SEC games from here on out.
Yeah, it gets serious real quick with Ole Miss, who's coming off the loss. And I don't know if you saw the Georgia-Alabama game or not. I turned it off and went to bed, and I thought, sure, that there was no way Georgia came back. But they did, didn't they?
Unbelievable game. Unbelievable game, Tommy. And yeah, that game looked like it was over with, and you're sitting there going, as you're watching that game, I was watching both LSU South Alabama and Alabama Georgia, and Alabama is just putting it on Georgia. I mean, they're up 28-0 in that game, and then Georgia just kept battling back, and when they scored that touchdown, Tommy, and you saw what Bryant-Denny Stadium looked like, and it was a great job by the ABC television crew, because all the different images of the LSU fans with their jaws down to the floor and they're just a look of shock. I mean, that could have been a really crushing loss for Alabama to blow a lead like that at home. There would be a lot of talk about, hey, first-year coach, this would never happen with Nick Saban, blah, blah, blah. But then Alabama scores on the next play. And for those that really think that the Alabama dynasty is over with, and I don't know, it's probably never going to be like it was with Nick Saban, as strong as they were, but you know, it's a true freshman wide receiver who catches the winning touchdown pass, and it's a true freshman cornerback that gets the interception that seals the victory. So there's still plenty of talent on this Alabama team. They are still a well-coached group. They have a coach that has won at a high level everywhere he has gone. So Alabama is not going away, but it was a fun game. It's what makes college football so terrific, to see two great teams like that play. And even though when it seemed like it was going to be a runaway for Alabama, Georgia just really battled back and gave us one of the best games of the year, it turns out.
A lot of fuel in that Alabama tank. I'm going to tell you what, 7:21 and a half, we'll pick it up here. We come back. Traffic now, WWL. 7:27, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director. Big win against South Alabama. But from here on in, nothing but SEC competition. Ole Miss on October 12th, I think it is, right?
That's right, Tommy.
Tell me what we know about this Ole Miss team.
Well, that was a tough loss for the Rebels on Saturday to the Wildcats. I mean, they went into that game, I believe, a 17-point favorite. And Ole Miss has been cruising through their season. I mean, they've played the likes of Furman, Georgia Southern. you know, they went to Wake Forest. They won there, but Wake Forest is not a very good team. And this was really the first time they've been challenged, and they failed miserably. This was you're expecting a high-powered Lane Kiffin offense, and they really struggled offensively in this game. So now Ole Miss has got to pick up the pieces, and they got to play against South Carolina now after losing to Kentucky, and then they head to LSU. So it looked like, heading into this season, that Ole Miss was in a really good spot considering their schedule and how good their team is supposed to be. This looked like a team that was going to make the 12-team college football playoff, but that's now in serious doubt. And you know, there's a couple ways to look at this. Is one, you know, Ole Miss, as I just mentioned, has not been tested at all this season until this game against Kentucky. And, you know, they only score 17 points. Jackson Dart had an okay game, 260 yards passing. Trey Harris continues to be a monster for them at wide receiver. But this is this is the reason why LSU plays a tough opponent at the beginning of the season, because you learn so much more about your team when you play those kind of games early on in the season. When Ole Miss was beating Furman by 70 points, they learned absolutely nothing about their team. I mean, LSU is so far ahead of Ole Miss at this point of understanding what their deficiencies are and how to improve them. it really helps them in, you know, as you move along in the season. And I thought that was an example of what we saw here this past Saturday.
And Ole Miss is not off until the LSU game. Ole Miss plays South Carolina this week, correct?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, so they got and we saw South Carolina could be a tough team. And kudos to Kentucky. They looked really bad in their loss to South Carolina earlier this year. And Kentucky has improved so much here in recent weeks. Nearly beat Georgia, and then they do pull off the upset against Ole Miss.
You think you know, but you don't know till you line up, do you?
Right, exactly.
Thank you, Jeff. Pleasure as always, Jeff Palermo, WWL.com, Louisiana Network News Director. When we come back, we're going to take a look at the week ahead on Wall Street. We call it Monday Morning Markets with Mark Rosa, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. It is next here on WWL. 7:45, quarter till 8, Monday morning, Tommy Tucker, WWL. That means it's time to join Mark Rosa, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union, for Monday Morning Markets with Mark, where we take a look at the week ahead on Wall Street. How you doing, Mark?
Tommy, good morning. How are you?
I'm okay. Hard to believe that the third quarter ends today.
That's right. It is hard to believe. And tomorrow starts the fourth quarter of the year. We're still getting economic news from even back on the second quarter, GDP. I'll go over it in a second. But, Wall Street has been breaking records. It's like the 40th record that was broken on the S&P. We broke records again last week. They're encouraged about the near-term future of the economy. I think there's enough headwinds, but, you know, I got to yield to whatever the market is thinking. And they didn't have a lot of economic news that came out last week, but the few things that did come out were pretty big items. We had personal income that continues to grow. I mean, that's good to fight inflation, and we needed that over the past couple of years. And it's growing incrementally each time we report on it. So it came out for August numbers, supposed to be up 0.4%, 0.4%. Which would be about a 5% annual rate, and it didn't. It missed the mark. It came in only up 0.2%, but still it was up. And then when it seems like every time personal income is up, personal spending is up. It was up by the like amount, both of them missing what Wall Street expected, but again, they were both in positive territory. And we had the Fed's preferred inflation gauge, of course. All the analysts sit at the very front 1 inch of their chair waiting for that news to come out. And when it came out favorably, that's what produced the record last week, the record in the Dow. So the personal consumption expenditure, when you hear somebody say PCE, that's what they're referring to for August. And it was up 0.2% the previous month, and it came in for August up 0.1%. So, Tommy, the significance there is we take those monthly numbers, we multiply them by 12 to get an annual rate for comparison purposes and looking at rates as we're moving through the year. So up 0.1%, that's inflation was up 1.2% in essence for the year. If you looked at August numbers and extrapolated it out, they also produce it. And somebody might say, well, 1 month does not a trend make. So you have to have maybe a companion statistic that comes out to show us, you know, what's happening. So the year over year, they produce that as well. And in July, it was up 2.5% for a year inflation. This past month in August, it was supposed to be up 2.3, and it came in lower than that 2.2. So if they were looking at getting it down to 2% on the monthly basis, this is what a lot of analysts were complaining about earlier in the year. On a monthly basis, if you keep producing 0.1% increases, inflation is happening at barely over a 1% annual rate. The trouble with that I would have, and just speak for myself, over the year over year, you're taking numbers that are 12 months old and you're factoring those in to produce that average. And even when we're doing that, it's coming in at 2.2%. So some analysts are saying, oh, you're well within 1% category because you're factoring in larger numbers that we're averaging over the past. And so we're well into striking distance. And that's where it goes back to when people were saying, well, they missed the mark. They should have lowered rates because they might push the economy into deflation or negative growth, and that's what they're trying to avoid. So they should have maybe reduced interest rates in July. They made up for it in their August meeting, actually September meeting, reducing rates by 50 basis points. And now the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, their Fed Watch tool, looks at the Fed's meeting in 38 days, and it's flipped over. The majority of the analysts responding for the next meeting were saying that, no, they're going to only reduce rates by 25 basis points at this next go-round. But actually, it's 53% now feel that they're going to push rates down by another 50 basis points at the next meeting. So that would be significant, but it's also a signaling mechanism. If you're playing catch up and you're doubling up on what would be a normal Fed rate change, increase or decrease, they like quarter point changes, and you're doubling up on these. So you're trying to play catch up, or have you missed the mark back when? Should you have done more earlier to fend off what was going on in the economy before we slip into a recession? But many, again, like I was mentioning, many on Wall Street think they're going to engineer a soft landing, think the economy is in decent health and it's going to weather all these changes that are going on. GDP, the final revision came out for the second quarter. Economy is growing at 3%. So that's a healthy level for, not everybody knows this, ours, the U.S. economy, is the largest in the world by a significant margin. So when you're trying to turn our economy around and modify its trajectory there, it's very difficult, because at the most recent reading, ours is a $29 trillion economy. That's what GDP is. All the value of the goods and services that are produced in the U.S. For a period of time. And they measure that quarterly. They produce those numbers quarterly. They revise them after they produce them. So this was the second and last revision for second quarter. You started off the segment right. We're finishing the third quarter now, and they start the party all over again. So by the end of October, we'll get third quarter numbers of GDP. But again, Tom, it's been healthy, and the market has responded the same, and again, breaking records here. So the next big part of economic news to come out would be the non-farm payrolls coming out Friday for September, and it's expected to be about 144,000 new jobs would be created in September. Now, this is the payroll number has probably been the most concerning, because it used to be around 300,000 a month, then it got into the twos. Now it's in the mid ones. So that's what the Fed has said before in previous meetings. We're worried about the employment numbers. If a lot of layoffs and so on start to accumulate, and we've reported on those in past segments, that's, I think, the single biggest worry is what's happening with the labor market.
So I guess as a takeaway, what could derail this?
Well, you could have I meant to say tomorrow starts fourth quarter, but it also puts us into earnings season. Mm-hmm. So two things that Wall Street likes, two things that determine stock prices, is interest rates, and they go in the right direction, down, and corporate earnings. So the right direction there would be up to maintain the stock prices where they are at these levels. It's Dow at over 42,000. So what could derail it? A very weak labor market and the accumulated layoffs that we've been talking about in previous segments. If that starts to those numbers start to get higher, the unemployment rate starts to get higher, I think that would be a big worry for the Fed. Because back to GDP, Tom, the consumer makes up 70% of the GDP numbers. So if we're pulling back collectively as a group and saying, you know, I think I just get feelings that the economy is slowing. There's some talk at work about, you know, we're not producing as much as we used to, and whatever industry you're in, all those conversations lead up to possibly a consumer saying, you know what, I was going to take another trip, or I was going to do this or buy a boat or whatever. Maybe I'll wait. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll wait until some of this clears up and we get a better footing on what the economy is. That has produced recessions in the past. The consumer saying, I'm just pulling back on spending. And that's all it takes to push GDP down. And if it pushes it into negative numbers, that was the old definition of a recession. If the GDP numbers were being reported as a negative number, that means the economy was actually shrinking. Instead of adding to GDP, we're reducing from GDP. And that used to signal the old definition of recession. Oh, you're in a recession. GDP fell negative. When it used to fall negative for two consecutive quarters, that was the end of it. That was definitely a recession. But with these numbers, it seemed, you know, and we're looking at second quarter. So that's when the summer was just kind of in its peak. So I think that has contributed to second quarter GDP as we move into the fall and people's travel are finished and those types of things. That'll be very telling going forward.
Very valuable information. Thank you, Mark.
Thank
pleasure
you,
as always. And we'll talk to you
my
Friday
pleasure.
When you help us manage our money with Mark Rosa, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. 754, 6 till 8. Traffic now, WWL.